Blog Talk Radio. Beauty Shop for the Soul is a magnificent transformation to restore, cleanse, and tap into the essence of who you truly are. Beauty Shop for the Soul gives you the experience of a new makeover from inside out. Beauty Shop for the Soul was a universal gift to be birthed into the world to host Joanne Buckner. Joanne received this incredible gift through a meditation to share with others to awaken the soul. Beauty Shop for the Soul is a true magical process of the divine being you truly are. Now sit back, relax, and let Beauty Shop for the Soul take you on a new, exciting journey with host Joanne Buckner.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Beauty Shop for the Soul. This is Joanne Buckner, your host on this journey today. And today the journey is an inward one, right into that height of your imagination. Imagination is the most magnificent gift given to us by the creator of all creation and endowed us with this ability to use it according to our own known, unknown, understood or misunderstood perception of what it really, really is. On a personal basis, for me, I knew that I had an imagination, but I did not realize the power of it as a little child. And of course, little children are always, always imagining things. They have imaginary friends. They're so creative. I remember that when I was a little bitty girl, that they didn't have talking dolls. Those came decades later. In the meantime, the advantage to that was little children were, I won't say forced, but they just naturally fed into their imagination. And so dialogues were created. And one child could be the mother, the father, the children, the whole thing of whatever role, whatever play they decided, they played all the parts. Purely, if you were as I was, I didn't have a sibling, female sibling close to my age. I had six brothers, and of course, my greatest yearning was to have a sister. So I created many of the dialogues, and of course, by the time my daughter was born, they had created, was it Chatty Cathy? Charming Chat. Yes, Chatty Cathy. And so you pull the string, and the doll would talk. And it was such a fun thing, and it was so novel. But little did we realize at that time that the downside of that is the more someone else creates your dialogue or your monologue, the less you think. And the less you think, the more you weaken that skill, that ability to think for yourself. So in the context of imagination, we are learning even now powerful that tool is. And in fact, according to the teachings of Charles Fillmore, who is a co-founder of Unity Worldwide, there's actually a power center in our body for imagination. And that is a location that is basically right behind the eyes. Very, very powerful tool. The thing is that if we don't know that it's there, if we don't understand how it's used, or if we know that it's there and for whatever reason neglect to use it, we get what we get when we get it how we get it. But we can make a conscious choice about that. And so Beauty Shop for the Soul is a program where it's a program of transformation. So it's an opportunity for anyone who is recognizing that so much more to life than whatever they are experiencing at any given moment, and you could be having, as I imagine you are, a wonderful life experience at this time. However, I'd like to remind you that in the context of infinity, there's so much, much more available to you. And then, of course, maybe you're using it exceedingly well. You're having radiant, vibrant health and wholeness. But what about your finances? Do you have more months, at the end of your money or more money at the end of your month, and you get to choose. We've been indoctrinated in this culture that we did not have that kind of power and authority, but the truth of it is we do. And so when I think about myself, as I mentioned earlier, as a little girl, my greatest imagination was to just be a child. I came from a large family, and my mother was a very strong disciplinarian. And being the only little girl in the group, she was overly protective of me. And so what that meant was there were a lot of restrictions in terms of where I could go, what I could do, how long I could stay. And it seemed to me that all my little peers could go out and play, and the mothers would say, don't be gone too long, or be back before dark, or they would just allow them to be what I thought was letting them be a child, and I felt constricted and restricted in that way. And so my imagination grew in that context of being, and how was I to know then that it would be showing up in my life later in some greater way without me even knowing still that it was my own imagination that is bringing to me the seed, the manifestation of the seed that had been sown in the fertile soil of a mind of a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old. You know, studies have shown that by the time we reach the age of 6 or 7, that we've already established a pattern of belief and behavior, et cetera, that will play itself out until we wake up to the fact that we are more than we ever thought we were. And so I want to just tell you, and in the meantime, anyone who would like to speak on the imagination, your experience of consciously choosing your imagination or unconsciously not knowing, however it was, however it is, what has been the transition or transformation, I would love to explore that with you. In the meantime, I did want to share a story about imagination. And so I'm going to bring on the ones who want to speak in a few minutes, so don't go away. Hold on. For those of you who are just on for the first time, I want to tell you what Beauty Shop for the Soul is. It is a 5-step program of transformation where we get to, as an individual, assess where we are at any particular time, universally or specifically, depending upon whatever the issues of life are at any given moment in your experience. I know that for me, I was a Peace Corps volunteer. It was a wonderful experience in general, but one of the requirements for Peace Corps was that you had to live at the economic level of the country that you lived in. And, of course, the whole reason behind Peace Corps was to help those in need of help. Well, I have to say that, spiritually speaking, helping those who are in need of help generally implies that we see someone lacking, missing, something, some sense of separation, lack, or limitation, not, spiritually speaking, a good idea. And so I spent 2 years having what appeared to be, and it was, that's what it felt like, a wonderful experience, but on returning back to the U.S., what I realized was prior to being a Peace Corps volunteer, I had always been able to manifest rapidly a job, and in fact, many jobs. I was a young divorcee with 3 children, and I often worked 2 jobs, and I could get them. Many times I was offered jobs that I didn't even know existed. And now, after having spent those 2 wonderful years in West Africa, I came back, and I made the decision because I had a new grandchild that I did not want to work immediately. I wanted to bond with this new one before she grew to a point where it would be more, it would require more than what it would at the beginning of her life. And she was only less than a year old when I returned. So I spent those 6 months with every expectation that I'd just go out and bam, have a new job. Well, it didn't happen that way. And then the weeks began to roll by, months added, the weeks rolled into months, and before I knew it, more months had passed by. And by that time, my finances had dwindled because I had traveled 3.5 months returning from West Africa to California. And then in the next 6 months, the resources financially that I had been depleted. And so now I began to understand that on some level, primarily unconsciously, this concept of poor, needing help, lack, limitation, separation, had really penetrated and permeated a part of my subconscious mind, and I was now operating from that level. So then it took me some years to work my way through that process because, of course, there was some of that already there just by virtue of the family that I was born into, in the environment, in the country, in the neighborhood, and so forth. So Beauty Shop for the Soul gives us this opportunity to make that kind of assessment. Where are you? Nothing wrong with it. It's just that you are here to live an abundant life, as it says in the scriptures, by Jesus, the Christ consciousness. I've come that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly. So if you're not having an abundant life, if you're not experiencing health, happiness, prosperity, creativity, harmonious relationships, then push number one, and let's talk about it. And on the other hand, if you are doing all that and more, push number one and share your experience. I'm going to bring on someone else so that we can explore this opportunity. So call your friends, tell them to dial in 646-200-4169 and to press number one. And as we do that, then we're just going to look at this tool called imagination and see about the activation of imagination. And one other thing, I know that there's probably not anyone in this country over 10 or 12 years of age that lives anywhere near Southern California and even throughout the country that hasn't been to Disneyland or Disney World. Have you heard the story? Walt Disney, while he was in school, was told by the teacher that he had no imagination and that he should find a job in an area that was equivalent of his skill. Well, he did that much, but it was certainly not what the teacher thought. This man took the skill, talent, and ability which the teacher had not recognized and activated it in his life to create Disneyland and then Disney World. And in fact, he employed, I don't even remember, such a huge number. Of course, he's gone, but Disney World and Disneyland are still very much alive and expanding. And in fact, Adventureland, Fantasyland, and the people that work for him in a certain category to create all of these wonderful activities, they are called Imagineers. They have to use their imagination for the job. So how are you using your imagination, and how is it showing up in your life? In the meantime, I'm going to push, and area code 208, you're on the line. Hello?
Hello? Am I showing up?
Oh, yes, now I hear you. Thank you. I know who you are, but would you tell the other listeners who you are and where you're calling from?
Yes, first name. This is Teresa from Moscow, Idaho.
Hello, Teresa from Moscow, Idaho.
Hello.
How are you? How are
excellent.
You today?
Excellent. Yes.
Oh, wow. Really great. So,
yes.
What would you like to share today?
One of my favorites is I constantly have things like this, of course, showing up in my life. But one of the most potent ones that caught, you know, my eye for many years is that when I was in my 20s and we were doing projections, it was back in the 70s, projections of what the future, what we would imagine for the future if we wanted it to go in the direction that would be healing, because we were anticipating what's actually happening now if we didn't start doing something different. And I had a vision of this piece of land that, you know, I thought decentralizing would be a good, healthy way to go, where we were more community-oriented and not, you know, big big business, big everything to heal the planet and so and for healing the people. And so I saw this piece of land. It was rolling hills and you know, vegetation, you know, the trees and the wheat growing and different things like that and water running through it. And when I met my who turned out to be my husband in the late 70s, he brought me up here to see his where he lived, and he had just bought a piece of land and took me out to see it, and I about fainted when I saw it because it was the piece of land that I had seen in my, you know, sort of vision quest of the late 70s. This was in the, no, it couldn't have been. It was when I was in college. So it was the 60s, the early 70s, late 60s, that I had seen this in my vision, and then it was 79, 80 when he brought me up here, and it was exactly as I had seen it. So that type of thing, you know, since I've been up here, I've had many experiences of actually seeing what I imagine come into physical reality, but that was a mind boggler. So I just wanted to share that briefly. I know you want to listen to your other callers and their things.
Well, excuse me. Thank you for sharing that very much. So this land that when you first arrived there, was it already cultivated or did it require the use of your imagination? Or here, or both?
Oh, both. Yes, it was just the raw land itself, and we now have a 8,500 square foot building, clad in green with a blue top to blend in with the countryside, and we have a goat barn and another little house down by the road, and we have a little garden down in the meadow part. We had 7-foot tall meadow grasses down by the water section, and now they've built a pond. The people that lived out there for the last 10 years, 15 years, built a pond, and they installed the, we had the water witcher came through, and he went all over the property, and he said, drill anywhere, and so we have plenty of water, and we've got a 2,500 gallon tank inside the building, and we use it for the building and also for the gardens, and they dug all the trenches and made it all happy for growing raspberries and all kinds of vegetables, and so it's transformed and it's getting more so. I mean, I'm working on getting it completed so I can have people come out there and live and turn it into a little farm. So that's all happening just like I imagined it way back when I was in college. So,
wow.
Can do.
That's a story. Thank you for sharing it. You know, when I think about the imagination, and, you know, I mentioned that we actually have a power center in the body for imagination, and it's right behind the eyes. It's really a tool. But, you know, if we can have the right tool and not know how to use it, and so the results that we get would be less than what is available to us when we understand that, one, it is a tool, and two, how to. In other words, you know, you can have a screwdriver and a hammer. If you use a hammer instead of a screwdriver, you might destroy the thing you want to have manifesting. So it's so important that we, first of all, understand it. And my experience, in fact, working with children, which I've done as well as adults, is that we think it's wonderful, their imagination, when they're little, but somehow around 2 age or so, we begin, as often adults, to discourage children because it seems like they're fantasizing, and it is, but there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's everything right with it, because once we start to implant the word no in their minds, their imagination begins to turn south. And so they stop for fear of being rejected or discouraged, et cetera. And once they grow up, the very thing that they need to have now has not been activated, it's been deactivated, I should say. You know, there's lots of research on the power of imagination. years ago, I attended a conference, and it was with, Dr. O. Carl Symington. And Dr. O. Carl Symington when people are in the last stages, oncologist. He was an oncologist. And on this program were Drs. Elise and Elmer Green from the Meninger Clinic, and they were pioneers in this biofeedback technique that they used to help facilitate healing for the patient. And there was Dr. Maxwell Maltz, who I believe was a psychiatrist, but he had people who came to him for psychiatrist. He must have been a plastic surgeon. So he had people who came to him to have some changes in their physical appearance. And what he discovered was that their personality before and after the surgery really didn't change, because it was not on the outside where the change needed to occur, but it occurred. It was on the inside. And so it was really interesting. And back to Dr. O. Carl Symington, when the patients came to him, he said that pretty much they had been like throwaway, so to speak. In other words, medically speaking, they had gone as far as they could go, and the patients were then invited to get their affairs in order, so forth and so on, and were referred to the oncologist for the last stages of this life. And so because he just was so many of these kind of situations, he began to explore the possibility of how to more effectively work with these people. And what he came up with, or what was given to him, was the idea of imagining, using your imagination. And so he would have the patients visualize themselves in many ways, their white blood cells defending the body, their immune system, the red blood cells. But what Dr. Symington said was that a larger percentage of his patients, they had no interest in doing imagination. In other words, they accepted the prognosis and were just allowing themselves to just, he didn't, these are not his words, but just leave the planet. But of those people who did, who would listen, who were interested and who did apply the technique, many of them were healed. And one of the patients, I don't know that he was a patient per se, but his own father had a heart attack, and he was at the time in his mid-50s. And as Dr. Symington worked with his own father, as a father-son, he realized in the dialogue that his father had not expected to live beyond middle 50. And so, of course, by the power of that imagination and that word, that belief system, things began to happen as he reached that age, so that he ultimately ended up having a heart attack. And when Dr. Symington and his astuteness, I guess you could say, made that assessment, he then had his father begin to visualize himself 20 years back into the past. In other words, instead of being 55, visualized himself as he was at age 35. And what were the kind of things that he did when he was 35? The kind of activities socially and professionally and otherwise. And so they spent moments. Now, with the patients, they needed, according to his suggestion, his experiment, was just 2 minutes a day in the morning and 2 minutes in the evening, visualizing the cells of their body becoming healthy through the protection of the white blood cells. And they could imagine it as an army moving in, you know, to protect and defend the health of the body. But with his father, as he began to have these times of visualizing himself decades prior to then, amazingly, something began to happen in his body. And what began to happen was his body began to restore itself, because now he had removed removing the stress, the strain, and whatever was causing his body to have the dis-ease or disease that he was experiencing at that time, so that his father ultimately was healed. And so that was like one of the really wonderful stories that that came out of that time, and that was, wow, back in the, I'm going to say late 60s, maybe early 70s, when I had the privilege of that, although I went away with more information and certainly inspiration, I regret that I did not fully apply all that I was hearing. I did apply as much as I could absorb, I'm sure, at that time, because that's always the way that it is. You know, we can use a thimble, a cup, a bucket, however large our container is, which is symbolic, of course, of our consciousness. We can just dip in to that universal consciousness and take away as much as we can consume or take at that moment. So in the process of Beauty Shop for the Soul, we learn how to expand, how to open up more, so that whatever is available to us, and we can never exhaust the universe. So it's partly the expansion in terms of consciousness, but it's also a part of recognition and realization, to recognize that you live in an abundant universe. And so it is a, what would you say, regeneration in terms of our thinking, in terms of our belief, in terms of our actions and our behavior, so that when we understand that there is only one presence and one power in the entire universe, but it is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent, then guess what? We're right in the midst of it. We're right in the center of all of that. And it's always, it permeates all of the existence. So the one creator of all things that created everything is there. So I'm wondering, Teresa, have you an experience where you discover that you were using your imagination in a way that did not support your well-being?
I imagine I have, you know, by worrying about something that I don't want to have happen, and then it happens, you know, putting my attention on the thing I don't want, you know, as opposed to the things I do want. I can't think of an example per se in the just off the top of my head. I guess, you know, I don't know. I didn't really worry about the deer, but the deer jumped in front of me. I don't know. I can't think of it. There's so many reasons. There's things that happen in my life that I might think are not on the pathway, but they turn out to have been leading me to where I was trying to go. So it's it could be a misconception that I have things that are out of whack, because this really leads me where I have the intention of ending up. You know, it just looked like a diversion, you know.
Well,
but maybe
sure
somebody on the caller list has got some examples of those.
Wait a minute, say that again. I'm getting a little bit static here. Would you repeat that?
Can you hear me all right? Yes, I can hear you.
Okay.
The things that may appear to be not what I have on my list of things to do that I want to have happen turn out to have been a spot that takes me to where I wanted to go, and it just was a spot on the path that wasn't how I picture it being. But it what without that happening, I would not have gotten to the place that I did want to go. So it's in divine order.
Well, you cannot not have divine order, because divine order is everywhere all at the same time. The thing is, like,
yes,
you know, nature hates a vacuum. So we, at least from my personal experience in working with clients, you know, a lot of times we make choices, conscious choices about some things we want, and then fail to make conscious choices in other areas. And when we, and but that doesn't stop things from manifesting because we fail to make a choice. So what we end up getting is perhaps what somebody else in the universe wanted us to have. And it may not even be somebody that we know. It's just somebody that the energy was just that magnetic. And so, of course, at the same vibrational frequency with which from which we are operating, so that things begin to show up just like weeds in a garden, you know, in the garden of our lives. So that kind of happens. And so sometimes you know, it's not consciously where we want to go, but we end up there anyway, and that's why it feels strange. And sometimes it could be even, you know, there is a chance, a potential, a possibility that it will be something better than what you had, but the greater chance is it won't. And so as we practice the presence on a regular basis, regular meaning as in daily, practicing the presence, then we get to look at spiritually, physically, mentally, emotionally, financially, socially, romantically, all those different areas of our lives. And we're such complicated, complex individuals, it would be exceedingly rare that any one person would be looking at all of those areas. Of course, there are those as well that recognize early on who they really, really are. There's not many of those, you know, on the planet. They stand out. Those would be the Mother Teresa's of the world and the Martin Luther King's and Nelson Mandela's, Gandhi's, and all of those sort of people that know. And then you have the other people who are programmed all throughout their lives, like John Kennedy and the rest of the Kennedys, who were groomed by the father with what he wanted. But it was so ingrained in them, and perhaps it was their desire, but it seemed like largely it was the desire of that father to have a son who would become president. And so every one of them, beginning with the oldest son who ended up losing his life during World War II, but he was being groomed from an early age to become president. So naturally the baton was passed on to the next surviving brother, which would be John F. Kennedy. And so he was groomed in the same way that his brother had been groomed. And I see that, I saw that as well when I was Peace Corps and I lived in West Africa. The country that I lived in, the person who was over a particular tribe, and there are many tribes, he was called the Mora Naba. And I saw the same thing as I saw the Dalai Lama in Australia a few years ago. It is, in the case of the Mora Naba, these children or the successor to the current one, generally they are removed from their families at a very, very early age, 2-3 years old. They're taken out of that environment and out of that household, and they're groomed, and they're constantly being pumped with the ideas of what it's like, with the visualization of being this ruler, and this one who would be over the land and the people and all of these kind of things, so that when you're eating and sleeping this, then what else could you almost end up being except the thing that you've just been cultivated? It's like cultivating the soil in your garden. When you attend to it every day on a regular basis, removing the weeds and making sure it's watered, and you know, then there's that aspect of nature, the wind and the rain and the sun, and all of these things are helping to cultivate the seed that's in the soil. But the same thing is true of us. And unfortunately, many of us really don't spend that kind of time, and primarily because we don't have that kind of time, unless we have been fortunate enough to have been born as the Kennedys were, family where they had financial resources that a lot of the time was not consumed having to take care of daily household chores because there was somebody else being paid to do that. So they could be just cultivated academically, socially, and politically, and whatever other way that was necessary in order to achieve what they would want. But then you have the people like Oprah, Michael Jordan, and a few others who had an idea at a very, very early age of what it was that they wanted to be, and they saw themselves doing that and being that and having that. So that one of the things about imagination, sometimes we think that it is just about seeing, and it is about seeing. That is really, really, really significant. But I was reading what I think, well, one of the ministers, I'll just say, I heard him say that, you know, we have, but the sixth sense generally has to be cultivated. It's there, but often we either ignore it or don't realize it's there or don't respond to the input once we receive it. But the intuition is like a muscle. If we don't exercise it on a regular basis, it becomes weakened in the same way that if we were to or lie in a bed, sit in a chair or lie in a bed for an extended period of time and then stood up to walk, your legs would feel weak. So the same thing without the intuition. And so this, what this minister said was, when the intuition is not operating in its optimum level, that it's called a sixth sense in some cases. So without the optimum activation of the sixth sense, it diminishes power of the other five senses. So in order for those five senses to be highly effective, the sixth sense needs to be in operation. And I thought that was interesting. So one of the ways to practice, so anybody who's listening and you want to have a greater experience in any aspect of your life, it doesn't matter what it is that you can cultivate through the power of your own imagination, but by using your sense of not just sight, but sound and taste and touch and smell. When there's a desired outcome, and the word desire itself means of the Father. So the Father, which we would call the Creator, and some may call it God, and whatever name, we're not talking denomination here because this presence and power I'm talking about far exceeds religious or philosophical, any denomination. So as we begin to bring in all of these other aspects of our senses, it becomes heightened, the sixth sense, so that things begin to appear, so that this imagination is like a tool that gives form to the formless or shape to the shapeless, like in the scriptures in the beginning was the word. And so when that word was spoken, so then you have, these are some of the senses that are being activated there. You know, the word was spoken, and of course, the word was let there be light. And so as we began to visualize light, I remember one of the early things that I didn't know about when I was a child, but when my children were growing up and I understood that the white light was a light of protection and that you could visualize that, we began to do that. And so eventually one of the experiences that I had was as my oldest son was in college and he was in a place that they didn't have a high number of people of color in that particular place. And it was his first time away from home. He was probably, maybe 400, 500 miles away from home. And I remember not telling him, but I used to mentally surround him with light every day. And I had read about this through Dr. Joseph Murphy, who had been a priest for 30 years and then became a metaphysician. And I used to listen to him on the radio every morning. And he had told a story about a woman whose son had been sent to Vietnam. And in her concern and worry, et cetera, she had had a consultation with Dr. Murphy, and his advice to her was surround this young man with light. And what happened with her son was that he was in a platoon or a squadron that entered into a field and they were ambushed. And everyone in that particular squadron except for him was killed. And so the outcome of that was, for whatever reason, known and unknown or understood, was that this mother had been visualizing this light. And I thought, wow, that's an interesting idea. I think I'll use that. So I actually began to use that concept, and I was surrounded. In fact, I must tell my son, I never told him this story, and it's been many, many years ago. So he was in a dormitory, and he was running track, and the other members of the track team were also African-American kids, and they were in their the room where they played pool, the game room, I guess you would call it, and unfortunately, somebody shot through the window from the outside, and they had a shotgun. And the person that was standing, fortunately, nobody was, there were no major injuries and certainly not a death, but somebody had shot through the window of this room where they were. And the kid that was standing right next to my son received those pellets into his arm. I think it was just one arm. But the interesting thing, my son called home, but when he first made the call, he did not tell me what had happened. He just called in. He talked for just a quick minute, and he hung up. And then later on, he called back. Not that much later, maybe 5 minutes. And this time when he called back, he said about the incident. And I knew immediately that that white light was for the mother whose son was in Vietnam. So anyway, that's something that I use my imagination with a lot, is using the white light of protection. And one of those many, many incidents that I've had over many years, I rode a motorbike when I was a Peace Corps volunteer, and so I would always automatically get on when I got on the bike, because, of course, they didn't have the smooth paved roads and all this other, and I lived in a place where it was considered the mobilette capital of the world. Everybody had a motorbike, a mobilette, or some motorcycle, something of that nature. And so twice I was knocked off of my bike by another motorist. And I'm happy to say, even though I was in my 40s at the time, I had no broken bones, and the skin was not lacerated in any kind of way. But I had always began with that light of protection when I got on the bike. And then one day, I had been there maybe a year or so, and I was riding my bike. I was actually praying and surrounding myself with light. And I could see my little rearview mirror, a car coming up behind me. And he wasn't speeding, but he was getting closer to me all the time, which I thought was strange. And so then as he got very close to me, and I'm closest to the curb, or the walkway, because there was no sidewalk there, this guy pulls to my left. He comes beside me and immediately cuts across and hit me. I was actually praying. I was already praying before the car got there, and I'd already done the light thing. And the most amazing thing, as I mentioned a while ago, I had been knocked off of my bike not once but twice before and was uninjured. Now, when this car, which was bigger than the motorbike that I had been collided with earlier, I was not knocked off of the bike. The guy made the right turn, hit me, and neither of us could stop immediately. He was making a right turn, and I was keeping a cross. And, of course, the first blessing was that I obviously wasn't knocked off or killed or seriously injured, but I couldn't stop. But there was no traffic either direction on the street that I was traveling on, no other street that was perpendicular. The only traffic at that time were the two of us, the man in his car, and I was on my motorbike. And the momentum carried me through that intersection to a few yards just beyond there before I could come to a stop. And this guy made a right turn, and it took him, I guess, a short time before he could as well come to a stop. So both of us now, and I remember when I could stop, I was just standing, straddled the bike. My feet were on the ground. I had not been knocked over. The bike was upright, but the pedal, which was metal, was totally bent down toward the ground as opposed to being a brace for your, you know, for the sole of your feet or your foot, my foot in this case. And so by the time I could come to a stop safely, the guy had gotten out of his car and was running back across to see, you know, what had happened. At that 90-degree angle, we really couldn't quite clearly see each other. But he came back to check, and I, you know, examined myself. I didn't see any lacerations. I didn't feel that anything was broken. It's just the pedal. Even though my foot was on that pedal, there was nothing to indicate that there had been some force against my foot. But the pedal obviously showed that there had been some force because it was bent down, and the guy tried to raise it up, but he couldn't. I had to later take it to a shop. So that's one confirmation of the power of visualization. In this case, it was light. And so for any of you who've never heard of that, or those of you who have heard it and maybe for whatever reason haven't used it, it is a wonderful way to surround yourself with protection. And some of you might be saying, well, you know, I don't visualize things. I'm auditory. Or whatever else you might say, you know that you can speak the word. That's how creation started. You can call for it and have it manifest. So I just recommend to you, I encourage you to use the light. And not only that, if you were studying and needed to know, you can use that light to turn on the ideas that you need to have to manifest answers, solutions, resolutions to circumstances and conditions. Just have fun playing with your imagination in a conscious way. It's going to work in the same way that, you know, you can use fire to warm your thing with water. It can save your life or you can drown in water. Well, anytime there are those aspects of the universe that we call God, they have both sides. There's two ends to the spectrum. One of them will manifest the desires of your heart. And remember, desire means of the Father, and no desire ever comes without the complete manifestation, all the mechanics for the manifestation of it. I had that experience more than once when I had no clue what I was going to do or how I was going to do it, and just step by step by step, it began to unfold when I just discovered that I did not have to know, I just needed to make a decision about what. So we get to decide on the what, but not the how. You know, we and how we get the, you know, there's an expression, paralysis by analysis. When we try to figure out on our own exactly what to do, when to do it, and how to do it, then we find that we can achieve to some level and manifest some of that, but there will always be a ceiling, like a glass ceiling, that we seem not to be able to rise above, and that's because we're in this universe of infinite abundance, and none of us, we're always ever-increasing and expanding, but the more we increase and expand, we still have an equal distance from where we are to infinity. So we can begin practicing the present in knowing that there is, through every desire, every imagination, whether it's ours being used by us or someone else's being used for us, there's something that is unfolding, and we can take charge of this experience that we have that we call life for ourselves. So a lot of times, you know, I had a client once who considered herself to be very, very successful, and she was. She was a businesswoman, and she was successful in financially speaking as well as with the products and services that she delivered. But she had a revelation once, and the revelation that she had was Father had trained her and had guided her, which was really a good thing, of course. And but what she, over the years, when she got married, she married a man who was much like her father, which is fine as well. But then he took over the reins where the father left off. And at some point, as a lady began to independently experiment, she discovered that she was not able to manifest, not because the potential and possibility wasn't there, but simply because she had never done anything independently. She had only followed the directions and instructions of her father and her husband. So now she was coming into that next level where she was going to be able to do this on her own and independently, but first had to come to realization of how she was operating. So once that was given to her, now the path is clear, and she could begin the manifesting on her own. And so, of course, the danger to that, if there's such a thing as danger, is that the thing that she would want may not be the thing that she was initially groomed for, and that's okay. It has served her well in that case. So I would just ask you, those who are listening, are you manifesting your dreams through your imagination, or have you put your dreams on the shelf? And if so, nothing is ever irreversible. You can get them off the shelf, dust them off, and begin imagining what would it be like. It's never too late. There are people like, what was it, Alberta Hunter, who became well known as a singer in her 80s. She had been singing all of her life, but there was a change in her. Now in her 80s, she became exceedingly well known. There's also little Jimmy somebody or other who at age 75 began traveling around the world, has this wonderful melodious voice, And so there are many, many stories. I love the advertisements where they show seniors who only discover in the late years, in the autumn of their years, that there's this presence and power in them that is available to them and they can use it. So wherever you are, at whatever age you are, in whatever circumstances you find yourself in, it's not over until it's over, and it's not ever over because in the context of the universe, there's always something unfolding, always something unfolding. And so as you begin to take an assessment in Beauty Shop for the Soul, the first thing you'd look in the garden of your life and see where there's any discord out of alignment. Is there, as you look physically, mentally, emotionally, financially, professionally, socially, is there some balance in those aspects of your life? Or do you see major differences? And if so, I can help you bring those things into balance. You would be the one to make the decision. You would be the one to identify old patterns that no longer serve you. And then, of course, just like at the traditional beauty shop, once an assessment is made and you're given the finding of the condition of your hair, you would have just identified the condition of your thinking, in other words, your head. And then there's a cleansing process, because sometimes we've been given the belief that you could be too old or too young or too short, too tall, too fat, too thin, thing that denies you the privilege, the opportunity to be all that you came to be whatever it is that you were created to be, is an erroneous and false belief, and you can clear that out. It's a purification process that's equivalent to the shampooing that is done when you go to the traditional beauty shop. And then what comes next? The assessment is done, there's a cleansing done, and then a conditioning. Because when something's been off of conditioning, i.e. your thinking, meaning if it's not in alignment with the truth of who you are, then, you know, a lot of that, some people say thinking. Most of that was handed to us not with any maliciousness or malintent of not knowing, not understanding, and accepting what had been given to them, and they pass it on to us, and we pass it on to the next generation. But there's a song that we should sing. I am remembering who I am. And as we began to remember who we are, that we are these magnificent spiritual beings, made in the image and likeness of the Creator and endowed with the ability to make choices in every area and arena, that there's power in the word, that every word is a container for power. And as the scripture said, and he sent his word in and healed them. And so we send our word out, and the energy of the word goes out before we ever even speak it. And then it just links up with whatever is at that same vibrational frequency. As Abraham Hicks said, and if, for those of you who may not know who Abraham Hicks is, it's just a group of entities that express through Esther Hicks. And so they talk about what it takes for a thought to, I'm going to use the word congeal. They didn't use that terminology, but that's the essence of it. That if you can think a thought for 17 seconds, a pure thought of a desire, it will manifest and be the equivalent of what would be 200 physical hours or 200 hours of physical labor. Put a lot of words in 17 seconds. For example, most people or many people often have the desire to be rich. And so it just teaches it. I want to be rich, but nobody in my family has ever been rich. My mother's people, my father's people, and all of this. And probably by this time, 17 seconds are not up yet. However, I've already neutralized the desire by having a negative thought that I've attached to that. So you can practice 17 seconds of just pure focus on the desire, whether it's your health or your finances, whatever area does matter. And then if you would double that 17 seconds to just 34 seconds that of a pure thought, that it would hook up with the same vibrational frequency, thoughts in that same frequency, and would that hours. So we're talking 2,000 hours of physical labor from just 34 seconds of unadulterated thought, pure thought. Practice this. And so then they take it up another notch. Three times that many would be 51 seconds. And, of course, then you would multiply the 2,000 times 10. And it goes to the fourth level of 64 seconds focused on the desire. And so, of course, the suggestion by Abraham is don't pick anything initially that you have a strong attachment to the outcome and to do it more than once. Because when you have a strong attachment to the outcome, then it puts unnecessary stress. And, of course, you want to be stress-free when you're using the power of your imagination. And so pick something that you have no attachment for. And then after you do the 17, 34, 51, 64 seconds, then pick another item. Go through that same process again. And then pick yet a third item. The idea of this is that when you see the manifestation of this, if you only did it once, you're likely to think that perhaps it was a coincidence or an accident. But once you've done it several times, you're more likely to accept the fact that there is that power and that ability to have that kind of experience. And according to Esther Hicks, it happened for her. And I have to tell you that I've done it myself once I was introduced to the idea, to the concept of that. And so I would invite you that this next week, practice with your imagination. Pick something that you have no attachment to the outcome and just imagine it by or how much you put into those 17 seconds and whether it's in alignment with the truth of who you are. Because if by any chance it's not in alignment, then, you know, you have that the combination of neutralizing the positive with the negative. As that old song I used to hear when I was a kid, you have to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and don't mess with Mr. In Between. As you focus upon the positive and the power of your imagination, look for something wonderful, marvelous, and magnificent to happen. So start from where you are. Don't stop at where you want to be. Go beyond where you want to be and look back at what you wanted. By Neville Goddard, who did a great number of things on the power of imagination. Have a wonderful, blessed, marvelous, and magnificent week. Just one day at a time, 1 minute at a time, one imagination at a time, and then do the same imagination over and over and over. I'll look to hear from you next week.
Thank you for listening to Beauty Shop for the Soul with host Joanne Buckner here on Earth Angels Radio. For more information on Joanne, please visit earthangelsradio.com. You can also contact Joanne by email at ourbeautifulsouls@gmail.com or call her at 702-622-4937. What better way to transform than a day at the beauty shop? Beauty Shop for the Soul.
This is Adam Schefter for 5-Hour Energy. Throw myself in 5-Hour Energy throughout the season as I weigh in with my opinion about the games, interview players and athletes from various sports, and share some personal thoughts about my favorite topics. Click the banner or visit 5HourEnergyAthletes.com for the latest 5-minute conversation. 5-Hour Energy works for me. It can work for you, too. Individual results may vary.
Adam Schefter is a paid spokesperson. Visit 5HourEnergy.com. That's 5HourEnergy.com. Love Hope Radio. Hello and welcome, everyone. This radio show is presented by ModernWeddingMom.com and founder Erica Loudon. That's me. ModernWeddingMom.com is a website devoted to the mother of the bride, the mother of the groom, and brides too.
This is Adam Schefter for 5-Hour Energy. Join myself and 5-Hour Energy throughout the season as I weigh in with my opinion about the games, interview players and athletes from various sports, and share some personal thoughts about my favorite topics. Click the banner or visit 5HourEnergyAthletes.com for the latest 5-minute conversation. 5-Hour Energy works for me. It can work for you, too. Individual results may vary.
Adam Schefter is a paid spokesperson. Visit 5HourEnergy.com. That's 5HourEnergy.com. Love Hope Radio.
Hello.